Welcome to Guide to the Cosmos on webtalkradio.net with your host, Dr. Robert Piccioni, physicist, public speaker, and author of Everyone's Guide to Atoms, Einstein, and the Universe, and his new second book, Can Life Be Merely an Accident? With Robert as our guide to the cosmos, we will explore the frontiers of science and participate in the exciting discoveries of physics, astronomy, and cosmology. Now, providing public access to science, here's your host, Dr. Robert Piccioni.
Thank you for tuning in, and welcome back. In February, we had a show about Einstein and how he changed our concept of time. Einstein explained that time is relative, meaning that it runs at different rates depending on motion and gravity. Today we're going to follow up on that with another result of Einstein's theory of relativity, the apparent change in the length of moving objects. Have you noticed that cars zipping by on the other side of the highway look shorter than normal? Well, actually they are, and let's find out why. As we always do, we have some great graphic images posted on my website to illustrate today's show. So go to guidetothecosmos.com, click on the microphone icon, pull up the show menu, and pick today's show, Hey Einstein! My yardstick is bigger than yours. Let's begin with a basic question. So what is all this relativity stuff about anyway? You know, often at cocktail parties and such, you'll hear someone say, oh, does that really matter? After all, Einstein said, everything is relative. And usually this is just an excuse for some sort of aberrant social behavior. Sorry to disappoint some of you out there, but monogamy isn't relative. Einstein isn't going to help you convince your spouse that one indiscretion isn't so bad relative to Tiger Woods. What Einstein really said was that some measurements are relative. That is, their values are different depending on who's measuring them and what their state of motion is. But he went on to say that the laws of nature are invariant, meaning that they are exactly the same for everyone, anywhere, anytime. So what is relativity? Well, the idea originated not with Einstein, but actually with Galileo. He said that the laws of nature don't depend on how fast we are moving, which is very different from what the ancient Greek philosopher Aristotle had said and what everybody believed for thousands of years. Galileo said there is no such thing as absolute motion, and all that matters is the motion of objects relative to one another. Let me give you an example. Imagine there are two scientists, each is sealed up tightly in their own lab, with no contact whatsoever with the outside world. Actually, this is pretty much their normal condition. And imagine we give each of them all the equipment they might ask for. Oops, stop. Now that would be impossible. Let's just say that we gave them a huge amount of equipment. Now imagine that we put each of these laboratories into an airplane and fly one of them west at 200 miles an hour and the other east at 600 miles an hour. Now the principle of relativity says that there is no experiment, no measurement that the scientists can perform within their labs that would allow them to measure their airspeed, or even to know whether they were moving at all relative to the Earth or to one another. And this is because any measurement that they make will give exactly the same result regardless of their velocity. So their actual velocities don't matter at all. This is the principle of relativity. So that means it doesn't matter whether everything attached to the ground, people, trees, buildings, and all that, are actually stationary or whether all of these things are moving together. And that is a good thing, because the truth is that we don't really know what our real velocity actually is. Some of you might be sitting down and some of you may be driving in your cars, but all of us are really moving east at probably about 800 miles per hour, depending on your latitude, because the Earth is rotating once each day. Now, if you're driving, you won't get a ticket for doing 800 miles an hour because the policeman's radar guns are moving with you at exactly the same speed. The Earth's rotation doesn't change your relative speed. But we're not done yet. The Earth is carrying all of us around the Sun at 70,000 miles an hour as it orbits the Sun once a year. And the solar system is orbiting the center of our galaxy, the Milky Way, at about 500,000 miles per hour. And our galaxy is heading straight for the Andromeda Galaxy at about 250,000 miles per hour. And we're all speeding toward the Virgo cluster. Well, you get the idea. All of these velocities are in different directions, and so who knows really how fast we're going. Well, if all of this has made you dizzy, don't worry. Just relax, because it doesn't really matter. The principle of relativity says that nature depends only on relative motions. Now, this is a principle, like all others of science, that can't be proven by mathematical logic alone. Only experiments can determine whether or not nature agrees with human logic, and whether she acts accordingly. Before Einstein, there were a great many physicists, actually probably most of them, that doubted that relativity was a true law of nature. They knew light was a wave, and so, like all other waves, it should be traveling through something, a medium. For instance, sound waves travel through air. Air is the medium of sound. Ocean waves travel through water, and on and on. Well, they didn't know what the medium of light was, but they gave it a name. They called it the luminiferous ether. And this ether had to fill the entire universe, because after all, we can see light from the most distant reaches of the universe. And so they started searching for this ether. Now, two prominent American physicists, Albert Michelson and Edward Morley, made an extremely precise device to search for ether. If they had found ether, then absolute velocity would matter, and relativity would be wrong. Now, to measure Earth's absolute velocity, Michelson invented something called the interferometer. The basic idea is very simple, and it's illustrated in image number 1 on the website. They built a large L-shaped device, with each of the two legs of the L having the same length. And they put a light source at the corner where the two legs came together and mirrors at the end of each leg. So when they flashed the light source, light would shoot down each leg, bounce off the mirrors, and return to the starting point. If the legs were exactly the same length, then the two light flashes should return at exactly the same time. The heart of Michelson's invention was that he found a way to very precisely measure the time difference between the returning light pulses. So here's how the experiment worked. Since the Earth goes around the Sun once each year, we know the Earth moves 70,000 miles per hour in one direction in May, and 70,000 miles per hour in the opposite direction 6 months later in November, when the Earth is on the other side of its orbit. So if this ether actually does fill the entire universe, then Earth's velocity through the ether changes by 140,000 miles per hour every 6 months. They could detect this change because light's velocity would change as the Earth went through the ether in different directions. And also, if they turned their device to point in different directions, they would see the speed of light changing along the two arms, because the direction of the two arms would change relative to the ether. Over many years, Michelson made countless very precise measurements, but much to his chagrin, he never saw any change at all in the speed of light in any direction, at any time of year, at any time of the day, and that proved that ether really didn't exist after all. Light, we know now, travels without a medium. For his remarkable achievement, in 1907, Albert Michelson became the first American to win the Nobel Prize in physics. Now, normally, getting a Nobel Prize puts a physicist on cloud nine for the rest of their life, but not Michelson. He never stopped believing in ether, even though his experiment had proven that it didn't exist. And he struggled to figure out how his beautiful experiment could possibly have gone wrong. And even after Einstein explained to the world why Michelson had been absolutely correct, and the world was praising Michelson for his accomplishments, Michelson continued to believe in the ether, and he died believing that his great experiment was a complete failure. It's an interesting insight into the frailty of the human mind. So how did Einstein explain the fact that Michelson's device never detected any change in the speed of light? Well, the key is length contraction. As Einstein explained, when we measure distances, the results we will get depend on our state of motion relative to what we're measuring. When we look at a jet zoom by, it appears shorter to us than an identical jet idling on a runway. The moving jet's length is contracted. Image number 2 on the website illustrates how much this length contraction is for various velocities. For velocities, let's say less than 1,000,000 miles an hour, length contraction is very small indeed, and it's generally too small to notice or even be measurable with all but the most exquisitely precise devices, like Michelson's. That's why no one caught on to this before Einstein. It's only important when velocities get to be very, very high, velocities close to the speed of light. Now, have you heard about the new Air Force jet, the X.5C? It flies at half the speed of light, 336 million miles per hour. Your tax dollars at work. There's still a few issues that the Air Force is trying to work out. Turns out if the pilot pulls the trigger 1/100 of a second too late, he'll miss the target by 1,000 miles, flying at that speed. But anyway, when they do fly at half the speed of light, the X.5C is actually 15% shorter than it is on the runway. It has the same height and width, but in the direction that it's flying, it's shorter. And this also applies to the crew and everything else on board. If they brought a yardstick into the cockpit, it would be shorter than our yardstick on the ground. So if the crew measured the length of anything with this shorter yardstick, they'd get the usual result because the object is also shorter, and both the object and the yardstick are shorter by the same 15%. Einstein said this has to be true because otherwise the jet would know that they had an absolute velocity, and that would violate the principle of relativity. Now, if the crew of this X.5C looked down at the ground, they would see that we and everything else down here also look to them 15% shorter. That's the symmetry of relativity. Now, what if the jet was to fly even faster At 90% of the speed of light, that would be over 600 million miles per hour, the jet would appear to be only 43% of its normal length, less than half. At 99% of the speed of light, the jet would be only 1/7 of its normal length. And at the highest velocity of any charged particles that I have ever worked with, which is 99.999999997% of the speed of light, if you lost count, that was 9 nines followed by a 7, then the jet would be 40,000 times shorter than one on the ground. And if it were possible for the jet to fly at the speed of light, which isn't possible because that would take an infinite amount of fuel, then the jet would actually have zero length, which might mean that it wouldn't exist at all. You are listening to Guide to the Cosmos on WebTalkRadio.net. I am your host, Robert Piccioni, and today we're talking about length contraction. Hey Einstein, my yardstick is longer than yours. We'll be right back after these messages. When you're planning a cruise, the best place for comparing prices and itineraries is CruiseDirect.com. You can choose your cruise by destination, cruise line, or budget. CruiseDirect.com is your online destination for cruising.
Explore Dr. Piccioni's website, GuideToTheCosmos.com, and check out the spectacular discounts that are available to you, our radio audience. Robert's first book, Everyone's Guide to Atoms, Einstein, and the Universe, makes the exciting discoveries of modern physics, astronomy, and cosmology understandable for everyone. And it was just selected as the best science book of the year by National Best Books. As Robert says, you don't have to be a great musician to appreciate great music, and the same is true for science. If you can change money, you can understand Einstein. Robert's second book, Can Life Be Merely an Accident?, describes how precisely tuned the universe is to support life, and shows how amazingly improbable that is. Go to Robert's website and send us your questions, comments, and suggestions for future shows. That's GuideToTheCosmos.com.
We're back talking about length contraction, Einstein's theory of relativity. Now, for those of you who love math and math puzzles, images number 3 and 4 on our website show why this length contraction is necessary. And for those of you that are allergic to math, you can just ignore those images. But the basic idea is simple enough. Einstein said that light always travels at the same speed. When we talked about time slowing down when things moved, I showed you a sketch of a clock made from 2 mirrors and a photon bouncing between them. This was the episode we had called, Hey Einstein, what time is it? In that episode, the moving clock slowed down because its photon had to travel on a diagonal path, which naturally is longer, and thus it counts the tick-tocks more slowly. We have pretty much the same thing going on here. Imagine Michelson's interferometer with the 2 arms of equal length, with mirrors at the end of each arm, and a light source at the corner, where the arms meet. Now imagine that one arm is vertical and the other is horizontal, pointing in the direction of motion. Now we'll flash the light source, while the device is moving to the right at close to the speed of light. The light flash that goes up and down to the top mirror will have to follow a diagonal path, which is longer than the arm length because the mirrors are moving, just as we saw before. From geometry, we can calculate how long it will take the light flash to go up and down. The up and down paths will take the same amount of time. How long will it take the horizontal light flash to bounce off its mirror and return? Well, that's just a little bit trickier. To reach the mirror that is moving away, light has to close the initial distance, the arm length we'll call L, with a closing velocity of c minus v, where c is the speed of light and v is the velocity of the interferometer. Since the mirror is moving away, it'll take light longer to reach it. So the time it takes is L divided by c minus v. After the light bounces, it will take less time to come back to the source because the source is moving toward the light flash after it bounces. So that time will be L divided by c plus v. Doing all the math, we find that the arm pointing in the direction of motion must contract so that both light flashes come back to the corner at the same time, just as Michelson proved that they do. The length contraction factor turns out to be exactly the same as the time dilation factor we got in our previous episode. So if the jet is flying fast enough to slow its clock by 20%, then its length will also be shortened by 20%. Similarly for 50% or for any other factor. Okay, so let's do something fun with all of this. There is a famous puzzle in relativity about whether or not a yardstick can pass through a window that's 1 yard wide. Does the yardstick contract and make it through, or does the window contract and block the yardstick? Well, actually, I prefer a more contemporary example. Einstein in LA traffic jam, as illustrated in image number 5. Here we see that Einstein is driving a hot red sports car on the freeway when he sees the traffic ahead has come to a complete stop. He sees two trucks stopped in the right-hand lane straddling the exit ramp. From the pavement markers, Einstein realizes that the gap between the trucks is exactly equal to the length of his car. The question is, can he get through the gap at his current very high speed? Now, those of you who live elsewhere might say, well, why doesn't Einstein just slow down? Well, obviously, you've never driven in Los Angeles. We never use the brakes here, only the accelerator. And that's why Toyotas are still so popular in Los Angeles. So if Einstein guns it, he will see that the gap between the trucks contract because lengths contract. And he'll think that he won't be able to make it through. But the truckers will see Einstein's sports car contract because they think that's what's moving. And so they think Einstein won't have a problem. So who's right, Einstein or the Teamsters? As image number 5 shows, Einstein can actually only get through the gap if his car has a little bit of sideways velocity. If he goes straight ahead, he'll crash right into the cars that are stopped in front of him. Now, since length contraction is always along the direction of motion, and this direction must have at least a small component sideways, image number 6 shows that the clearance of Einstein's car doesn't change with velocity. This saves his Lamborghini. Wanting to fit in LA, Einstein floors it and zooms through the gap at 80% of the speed of light. We won't talk about what happens after he exits the freeway and gets onto city streets, doing 580 million miles per hour. Now here's one last mind bender for you for today. No matter how fast you think you might be moving through space, you and everything else are actually moving through space-time at the speed of light. And this is explained in image number 7. If your velocity through space is 0, you're stationary, that means, then you will be moving through time at the highest possible pace. And if you get in a jet and fly faster and faster, time will slow down in your reference frame. You'll be moving through time at a slower pace. Properly combining your speed through space and your speed through time, we find that you will always be moving through space-time at the speed of light. What about light itself? Well, it moves through space at the speed of light, and it doesn't move through time at all. For a photon of light, there is no time. Time never changes. There is only the now. All of its speed is through space, and none of it is through time. So if someone complains that you've just been lazing around and you hardly ever move, you now know better. Smile as you blast past them at the speed of light. Thank you for tuning in today. And remember, you are never too young or too old to wonder why.
Don't forget to explore Robert's website, guidetothecosmos.com, and check out the spectacular discounts on his books that are available to you, our radio audience. Send us your questions, comments, and suggestions for future show topics. That's guidetothecosmos.com. Goodbye.